There, do you have any idea what you're listening to?
London Philharmonic?
It's Venus.
Huh?
Venus.
Why not? We've bounced signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it, the other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Reese-Mandel, and I'm your host on today's program, The March of Technology and Radio. I'll be speaking with Andrew O'Boyle. He is a doctoral candidate, in fact, at the Institute of Communications Research at the University of Illinois. He's doing a dissertation on the impact of podcasting and webcasting community radio, and he also knows a thing or two about radio in Ireland and the European Union. So we'll be talking about that and catch up with some news. Do stay tuned. Well, thanks for joining me, Andrew. It's been over a year since you've been on the show last.
It has been a while.
It has indeed been perhaps
too long. Well, that's my opinion at the very least.
Exactly. And I think it's been about a year. And the last time you were talking about the dawn of Christian radio and Christian broadcasting in Ireland. It's sort of nascent there, but it's a very well entrenched sector of the broadcast industry here in the US.
Yeah, and I think since we spoke last, they've been moving closer towards actually getting on air with Christian stations in Ireland. Up until now, or up until recently, the broadcast regulators in Ireland had avoided considering openly Christian or openly religious services for airtime. The radio stations in Ireland, as I mentioned at the time, aren't necessarily a secular or aren't wholly secular. The state broadcaster, RTE, which is a public service broadcaster, does provide some religious programming on Sunday mornings. It provides both types of Christianity, the Catholic Mass and also a Church of Ireland service on Saturday mornings, and also some other bits and pieces through the week. And a number of local commercial offerings, including the Galway Bay FM, which is the commercial local station in Galway, where I'm from. My understanding is that some of the local religious dioceses are actually part shareholders of those. But in terms of actually explicit religious radio, that's something that that is very new to Ireland, and that kind of runs very close to breaching our requirements for balance and accuracy in all social and political controversial issues.
A little bit different.
A little bit different and a little bit new for us. Yes.
And as well, you host a blog where you talk about a lot of communications issues, as well as some larger political issues and social issues at funforall.org, funferal.org, and you host a program at WRFU-LP, which is the low-power station just across the way here in Champaign-Urbana, Illinois, WRFU, and that's every Thursday.
Every Thursday at 6, now broadcast on WETX-LP in East Tennessee.
That's great. And you're making it available online for people to listen?
It's currently available only on AudioPort, where I'm looking into options to get space that will be suitable for downloading other than the AudioPort option, which is, of course, only available to Pacifica affiliates.
Okay.
Any people who are Pacifica affiliates and happen to be listening, acriticalear.info is where you can get more information about how to syndicate that show.
We might have to talk about ways to get that online so that people can listen to it. But first, before we jump in, I do have two little pieces of news I did not want to let pass by before we jump into things. First, a couple of weeks ago, John Anderson and I were discussing the indecency regime and the current challenge of the networks against the FCC trying to enforce and fine them for fleeting expletives. One of which, one of your countrymen, your fellow countrymen, is responsible for.
Yes.
Mr. Bono.
Mr. Bono.
Indeed, the Supreme Court on this past Monday, the 17th of March, decided that it will take up the challenge. And so will be the Justice Department on behalf of the FCC versus Fox and other networks, including NBC, fighting the FCC's regime on expletives. And this will be the first time that the Supreme Court has taken up the issue of broadcast indecency since 1978, making the ruling, which has more or less been the law of the land, although it doesn't cover all things. Additionally, the FCC has scheduled a second hearing on network neutrality, despite the fact that Chairman Kevin Martin gave every indication that it would not be doing so. And this will be happening April 17th at Stanford University. And a lot of the motivation, I think, for the second hearing is that the first one didn't go so well. That was had at Harvard University a bit over a month ago, where many of the seats were taken up by people who were basically paid off by Comcast to take up the empty seats, but really not do anything with them. Supposedly for Comcast employees who never showed up, making it difficult for people who had, especially citizens who had something to say about network neutrality, to come and be heard. So we hope the same antics will not happen on April 17th at Stanford University, when the FCC will be holding another hearing about network neutrality. So, Andrew, well, first let's talk a little bit about something going on in Ireland right now with regard to broadcasting, and it regards a band that we don't really use here in the U.S. and have not used in the U.S. probably since the first quarter or so of the last century, called Longwave.
Yeah, and Longwave is something that really doesn't come to the attention of people in Ireland all that much either. We have Ireland, under international agreements, has been allocated one frequency, one channel on the longwave band. Longwave, for those who care, is down around 150 to 300 kilohertz.
I think it officially starts at 30 kilohertz.
30, well,
it's well below the AM band, as we call it here in the U.S., or medium wave, as it's called in the rest of the world.
And long wave broadcast operations use amplitude modulation, just like, well, what's known as the AM band here, but is really the medium wave band. But there isn't really a lot happening there. As I said, Ireland has one channel allocated there. Up through most of the 1990s, that channel was rented out by our national broadcaster to a private operation. I think they may have had a share, an ownership share as part of the contract, which was offering a commercial music operation aimed at the United Kingdom. And so there was no longwave service aimed at the Irish people or anything that was distinctively Irish in terms of culture or so on. It was merely rented out in order that those who, some group that couldn't afford or didn't want to go through the hoops with Oftel, the British regulator, could run a commercial music operation aimed at England and the rest of the United Kingdom.
Now, they ran this transmitter that RTE now runs, runs at 500 kilowatts, which for a lot of people who are not radio geeks like us, that probably isn't very meaningful, but WEFT runs at 15,000 watts, so 15 kilowatts. And in the United States, currently AM stations don't typically go past 50 kilowatts anymore. So that's a pretty large transmitter there, although partially it has to be large to work at that wavelength, I understand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so long wave, yeah, given how low down it is, you'd need more power. But also the way that radio waves are propagated, the way that they travel through the atmosphere depends on the wavelength that they're at. And so something like FM, what WEFT operates on, you can get from anything from a few hundred meters or a few hundred yards up to about 50, 60 miles.
Beyond the horizon, that, pretty much, is your limit, because the signals travel straight parallel with the Earth and then off into space. Yeah.
It can go through buildings to a certain extent, but not as well as some other things. So that's why if you go under a bridge, sometimes when you're listening to FM, the signal will fade. With something like the medium wave band, what's commonly referred to as AM here, you can get somewhat longer range at night, and this is one of the reasons why our local public station has to turn down its transmitter and go to only a few watts. Medium wave signals will bounce against parts of the atmosphere.
Yeah, the ionosphere.
And will travel hundreds or even thousands of miles. With long waves... it's slightly different, and it's almost as if the way it was described to me when I was learning about the different bands was it's almost as if long wave curves around the Earth.
It follows the curvature of the Earth, so you're not limited by line of sight.
And so it doesn't have the huge distances that medium wave can sporadically do at night, but more consistently you can reach longer distances. So this is why using the 252 frequency that or the 252 wavelength that the Irish broadcaster is available to it in order to reach the United Kingdom, which is a few hundred miles away from us, makes sense. Whereas something like medium wave will not reach all of that during the day, but will sometimes at night.
Indeed, it looks like Radio Monte Carlo in Monaco uses 1.2 million watts in order to broadcast. I'm sure it's a directional aerial, though. I don't see. I've got a little table here at Wikipedia.org. Doesn't say what direction it goes in.
Well, I know
broadcasting to
being perhaps a minor media geek or radio geek myself. When I was younger, I do remember hearing Radio Monte Carlo and some of the other stations broadcasting. From near, you know, the south of France or southern Europe, reaching up into Ireland, so you can reach essentially half a continent with many of these operations.
Which is why these allocations are given out on a national, international basis rather than on a regional basis as AM and FM licenses.
It makes no sense there's no way that you could just allocate them on a regional basis, because they are by their nature going to seep beyond national boundaries, particularly in Europe, and this is what they were largely used for, was in order to one of the ones there is the BBC uses 198 on which they send out BBC Radio 4.
Yes.
And also at night, the night service for BBC Radio 4 is the world service. So for those people who are listening in Europe, there isn't actually a BBC world service aimed at them, except other than the overnight service from BBC Radio 4. So when I was younger, I'd listen to BBC Radio 4 after 11 or 12 at night. I was listening to the world service.
Right, and indeed the BBC continues to scale back its shortwave operations, mostly in lieu of the internet. But in here, obviously, if you live in continental Europe, you should be able to receive it on the long wave band, which you don't really see on American radios, or radios destined for North America, except on radios that also receive shortwave. And here in the United States, if you're in the middle of the country, roughly like we are here at WFT in Illinois, there's nothing on the long wave band to hear except for some basic military communications or some beacons and things like that. Though I understand that there are people who are able to receive some long wave broadcasts from Europe on the Eastern Seaboard, you know, people who've, you know, designed antenna arrays and things specifically to receive these relatively long wave signals.
Not your average listener.
So, but then the news here is that the RTE has decided to use the band.
Yes, and this is causing quite some controversy in Ireland. To explain the situation at present, RTE is our national broadcaster, and they use primarily FM. Most listeners in Ireland listen on FM. FM has come to dominate the band even more so than here. There's not a lot happening on medium wave. I think one of the Christian services will be allocated to the medium wave band, and as well RTE simulcasts on medium wave. So up until the 19 it was the 1980s, I think, something like June 1980 was the first time anyone in Ireland broadcast on FM.
Hmm.
Up until then, there was nothing happening. But then through the 1980s, when non-state broadcasters were first licensed, they were only licensed to the FM band because they're meant to be local services, mm-hmm. makes more sense. And so as a result, people migrated largely to FM, and the state broadcaster simulcasts on FM. What's happened now is that they've decided to scale back and to get rid of their medium wave operation, mainly used for simulcasting. On occasion, they'll use it for an opt-out service where if they've got two sporting events or something like mm-hmm. this, they'll run one on medium wave and one on FM. But they've decided to shut off their medium wave transmitter and to only broadcast on long wave.
Okay, so that's the big controversy then, that they're basically losing a service. It's not unlike people being upset about the BBC shutting down their shortwave service.
Exactly. And the groups that are complaining about this are perhaps not surprising. On the one hand, people are worried that older listeners who live in rural areas where there isn't... So FM reaches 99.5% of the population. But if you're in that 0.5% of the population,
right.
saying that it's available on FM for most people doesn't help you. So rural listeners, and particularly those who are older or the like, are people who are going to suddenly wake up, as people here will with terrestrial analog television. Wake
right.
up one morning and suddenly it's not there. The other group groups that have been worried about this are immigrant groups. So Ireland has a large immigrant population in the United Kingdom, in England and Wales and Scotland, of course. And also we've got a special relationship
with Northern
Ireland.
Irish diaspora.
About a large portion, maybe half of the Irish diaspora, or of those of recent generations, are in England. And the worry is that that they won't now be able to hear it. Now, RTE's claim is long wave has better reception in the United Kingdom mm-hmm. than AM does, except at night. And but there's counterclaims. The long wave signal is interfered with by the Algerian mm-hmm. Station very late in the evening.
Okay.
The fact that people just don't, if you don't have long wave on your radio, are you meant to go out and buy a new radio set just so that you can listen to RTE? What happens with if you're listening in your car? Most car radios don't have long wave and so on. So people are feeling disenfranchised, that the burden is moving from the public service broadcaster to the individual listener, which is the opposite of the point of
universal
service.
Now, is this a bureaucratic decision? And was it within the halls of RTE?
It's wholly within RTE. And so some of their representatives have been called to essentially parliamentary hearings, mm-hmm. committee hearings, to answer for themselves. And their claim is that essentially they've just fixed, or their medium wave transmitter was out of operation for a number of months last year or the year before, and they got very few complaints about that. So they figure if people don't complain,
save
they must
the money,
be listening,
etc. Mm. Right.
Now, the funny thing is they then decided, they presumably decided to fix the transmitter,
mm-hmm.
have it on for another year, and now they're shutting it off. They're claiming money has nothing to do with it.
Okay.
Except,
there's
operational costs. These are medium wave transmitters,
relatively
expensive to run.
Yeah.
They take a lot of power, so there are costs associated there. Their claim is that, as I say, essentially you can go out and buy a long wave radio.
Mm-hmm.
The problem being, this puts a burden on each individual
right.
listener as opposed to...
And they're probably not as common. I mean, I don't know if you've checked the last time that you were mm-hmm. In Ireland. They're probably not as common as AM/FM radios.
No, if you're going to get a small Walkman-style mm-hmm. transistor radio, most of them will have... they'll all have FM. Most of them will have a medium wave. You're looking a little more sophisticated in order to find...
Like a table radio or something of that
Yeah,
order.
Now, the RTE people claim they were easily able to find them, and so they pull out their, here's one I bought this morning.
Right.
They are available, but you need to know what you're looking for, and you need to go out and do that. There's also the concern that RTE is saying that... RTE admits there are problems with the long wave band in the evenings,
mm-hmm.
and they're confident that there's a good chance that they'll be able to address this with the other broadcaster at some point in the future.
Right.
And there's also the fact that RTE is meant to be transitioning slowly to digital radio, and what you're asking on the long wave band. And so what you're asking people to do is to go out, buy a new long wave radio, which presumably a year or two from now will become obsolete as they move to something like Digital Radio Mondial or like DRM standard.
Yeah, such as the digital radio used within the United Kingdom or used by the BBC.
Well, that's the BBC and the UK use DAB,
right? DAB.
The DRM standard is a different standard, largely
not to be confused with digital rights management.
To be confused with digital rights management. DRM as a radio standard is an open standard,
right?
And
right.
It's gaining increasing support, including I've seen some links recently to people looking for it to be adopted on the 26 megahertz band here in the
US. People
have
been pushing that as an alternative to the problems with in-band on-channel so-called HD radio. Take a second to just remind people they are listening to Media Geek, your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Reisman-El. I'm your host. Check out Media Geek online at MediaGeek.net. And of course, you can get the program online. You can listen in your browser, download, or subscribe to the podcast at radio.MediaGeek.net. If you have any comments about the program, please do send them to me, paul@MediaGeek.net. I'm talking with Andrew O'Boyle. He is a doctoral candidate at the Institute of Communications Research, but also himself has a long history in community broadcasting. He helped co-found Flirt FM in Galway, Ireland, one of the first community broadcasters in that nation. He's worked here with WRFU FM, low power station in Urbana, Illinois, and has also done time here at Champaign-Urbana as part of our Celtic Collective here at WEFT. And he kind of comes in from time to time to fill us in on what some things going on across the pond, so to speak, in the broadcast realm. And I did want to fit in for us to be able to talk a little bit about community radio, since that's indeed the topic of your dissertation and ongoing research. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about what you're investigating.
So my research is focused on community radio, the love of my life. And looking at the impact that some new digital technologies are having on that. In particular, I'm interested in how things like webcasting and podcasting are running up against the nature of community radio. So to what extent can they be used to further the goals of community radio? To what extent do they pose challenges for those looking to do community radio? So I'm interested first in thinking, what is community radio about? And when you look at descriptions and discussions people have about community radio, repeatedly people talk about notions of localism, of community, the notion that it should provide space for new voices from within a community to speak to themselves. It should provide local decision-making structures and so on. And I think that's in part arises out of the nature of the radio medium as it presented itself to those people who were adopting community
especially,
radio.
Especially since most of it's on the FM dial, which is very, very local.
Yeah, and so people kind of had this local medium and said, what will we do with it? Well, it's best to serve local communities. Mm-hmm. What webcasting and podcasting do is they allow new opportunities, but also new challenges for community radio. So you get the possibility for something like Media Geek to be broadcast on stations, on other community radio stations around the country and around the world. And that, on the one hand, allows for interconnectedness between community stations, but also every time that a station chooses to take a show like Media Geek or chooses to take a show like Democracy Now, or like, it must, if it's true to its mission or to its, you know, moniker of community radio, it must ask itself, is this furthering our mission? How does this relate to what we see ourselves doing here? And so I'm interested in those sort of conversations that people have.
And those are very ongoing conversations at stations, and often very controversial, since community stations tend not to be run in the same way as even an RTE, BBC, or NPR, in that there's much more volunteer input, often run democratically, often a lot more listener input, member input, such that these sorts of decisions are not made by individual people or even small groups of people, but often have to be made by large groups of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and often you're either talking about making it by consensus or making it by multi-tiered, multiple constituencies. Here at WEFT, we've associates, we've a board, we've got
a programming committee,
yeah. different groups that kind of have different areas of expertise and that represent different constituencies, be it listeners or active members or so on. And so that's that. It's a complex set of discussions for stations when they decide how much syndicated content do we have. Some stations eschew syndicated content altogether. Others. And so this is in terms of, you know, taking content in. The other thing is in terms of adopting webcasting as an outbound medium. Mm-hmm. How does that change how people think about what they're doing on air? Are you talking to your local community, or does it risk having community radio fall into the trap that is all too easy of it becoming ego casting, as some people put it, where it's, you know, essentially, people kind of go, wow, it's a bigger platform, therefore it's better. Mm-hmm. Or is there a reason why using webcasting is furthering your mission, is making you do what you want to do better?
You know, and one of the things I hear come up quite a bit here at home station WEFT, but I've heard at other stations as well, mm-hmm. Actually kind of gets at that issue of what's happening in Ireland with the demise of the AM service of the RTE. People talk about sort of the Champaign Urbana diaspora, for lack of a better way of putting it, people who had been in Champaign Urbana and have gone off to other places, some places which may not have community stations or don't have stations that they like as much, and so allows them to keep in touch with some place where they had a connection and they can go back and listen to their old station. And I know that personally, I listen to stations that I used to listen to when I lived in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
That I like to hear non-commercial stations that have actually gotten better and more web-centric or as time has gone on. In addition to listening to my own local stations mm-hmm. here,
and that is definitely a service that community radio can provide.
Mm-hmm. Well, Andrew, this is a conversation we should take up again, especially as you get more research under your belt and you've had mm-hmm. a chance to visit more stations and talk to more stations and give me a sense of what you're finding. I mean, I certainly, it's something which, as a watcher of community radio, I've got some opinions about and see, but I don't really have the ability to do the kind of breadth and depth of research which you have in front of you on this project.
Okay, thank you very much, Paul.
And of course, your website is funforall, funferal.
.org.
We hope to get the critical ear up on the web for people to listen to.
And if people want to contact us there, it's acriticalear.info. We've a web address, or we've an email address and so on.
Great. Thank you again, Andrew. And this brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. And I'll be back in one more week with... This brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. I'm host and producer Paul Riesmandel. I'll be back in one week with more news and views in our media environment. In the meantime, check out the Media Geek blog at MediaGeek.net. You can listen to and download the program at radio.mediageek.net, where you can also subscribe to the podcast. If you have any comments about the program, I'd love to read them. Send them to paul@mediageek.net. Media Geek is produced at Community Radio WEFT in Champaign, Illinois, and also is heard on 12 other community stations across North America, including KRFP in Moscow, Idaho, KQRP in Salida, California, KRBS in Oroville, California, WTND in Macomb, Illinois, WRFA in Jamestown, New York, CKDU in Halifax, Nova Scotia, KWMD in Kosilov in Anchorage, Alaska, Free Radio Olympia in Olympia, Washington, WVEW in Brattleboro, Vermont, CHMA in Sackville, New Brunswick, WBCR in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, and WPVM in Asheville, North Carolina. The Media Geek Radio Show is available for free to any non-commercial community station. Just send email to paul@mediageek.net. Thanks for tuning in.